Okay, Talib, today, our guest has an empire just like us. An empire. You know?
Like the Babylon Empire, you mean?
Whatever you want to say. Because
empire cookies.
Should we talk about the Anunnaki?
Again. Because the name of his empire is more or less like the name of our podcast. Very exotic.
Oh, really? What's the name of his empire, man?
Makan Sutra and One Mic Stand. You know that you know, play of
it's
words.
Got a twang to it.
The play of words there.
Yours should be more like Kama Sutra.
Being Indians, no pun intended, man.
No pun intended. Well loved, well loved.
How are you doing, Tito?
I'm okay, man. How are you guys?
We are okay. We are looking forward to this podcast.
I'm well, man. Thanks.
Thank you.
To meet the legend.
To say as usual.
The king of foods.
The legend of food in Singapore.
That was what I told Martha Stewart years ago when she invited me to a show in New York.
Before or after she went to jail?
Sorry? This was after. Looking okay. Good. She was looking good, you know. And then I said, steady, they come back. You know, America has this culture. And then she asked me to cook laksa in a place and all that. And the people asked me, oh, Martha Stewart will be coming. You know, this is the question she'll ask. She'll ask you, what is laksa? Where did it come from? How do you make it? Blah, 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 blah. You got about 10 minutes. And then I said, yeah, sure. So the first question is, what is laksa? Okay. First question, she see me only, and she's got a very nice, commanding yet friendly presence. She asked me first thing. She look at me. She says, "What does KF stands for?" Then I'm like, "What? But I don't want to gonna ask a laksa thing, you know?"
Yeah.
I said, "Then I look back at her. Then I know it's American."
King foodie,
yeah. I said, "Didn't they tell you?" Then she no. King of food, nah. They laugh. The audience all laugh, and the interview went uphill from there. I love America audiences.
Wait, how do they actually take laksa? I mean,
if you describe and tell and sell the story properly, they will take.
Okay, how do you describe laksa to her?
Laksa is a curry.
How sexy do you describe it?
You say the aroma of the seven jewels, which is the seven Nonya jewels of spices from galangal to lemongrass to blah blah blah, and then it's uplifted by the umami of this dried shrimp paste and blessed with shrimp stock or chicken stock, and you blend your noodles in that and you top them with shrimps or clams and eggs and sprouts, and you perfume it with spits of laksa leaf. That is a bowl of heaven on earth.
Ooh, I can never describe that. So
you actually mesmerized me for a while.
And then Ang Mo go, wow, what is it? Well, I want that. And of course, our Singapore authorities were helping us organize a show. Oh, we got free laksa packs for everybody. Yeah. We were so happy. They love this kind of
they
stuff.
Enjoy
so
the
you
taste.
Got to, the thing about Singapore is we don't tell our food story properly. The people behind our food story are only interested in social distancing lah. Must step in when you masuk lah. Who's gonna continue lah? Young hawker lah. Say no. The story of food is what people want. You go and Google. If a foreigner comes and Google about our food now, we get all this HA2 person lah, you know, and all the hawkers closing. It's dim. It's very dim news for our UNESCO class hawker food culture.
You see, the thing with you, right, Sito, you've literally tasted everything, I assume.
Yeah, but I've not seen.
Known to us, lah. What is your go-to food?
Depends on what day it is, raining or not, which side of the bed I wake up, whether I wake up naked or with my underwear, whether my dog can lick my toe or lick my finger to wake me up. So depends.
Let me ask you a different way, like what Talib asked. What would be your last food on your last day on earth?
Oh, shit.
What would you eat?
Good questions. I will tell you what my father ate. And then I said, hey, wow, my God. My father is a foodie from Guangzhou.
Guangzhou
is the food
okay.
capital of China.
Yeah.
So the bugger swam here, like, post-communism. Is it? So
swam.
Yeah, he came here. He did his stuff, like, opened a business and all that. I mean, you see, like, he brought us up, provided pretty well. And then, you know, when I was growing up, we ate Mother Coke, we bought stuff. My father loved to eat our hawker food and all that. We used to have a lot of stuff on the table. And then every time my mother would steam a chicken and all that, he will let us hantam the wing la, the breast meat la, the chicken leg la, all that lovely parts, the drumstick and all that. Never relax. He go to the backside. I'm like, wow, daddy,
yeah, that's
very
a good,
good
part. That's a good part.
Daddy, right? Very good. He does all the good stuff. He eat the neck. All that. Then he will always ask for a bowl of fui. It is a fermented tofu cheese.
Mm-hmm.
Creamy, a little block of it. And salty and creamy and densely umami. And he will sprinkle sugar on it to counter the saltiness and the creaminess. Right? And then he put chili oil. Oh, no, chili flakes on it. And then he'll put some lard, just those crispy lard on top.
Mm.
I said, oh, okay. Then he will just take his, he put a chicken backside and a chicken neck. Right? And then he'll take his chopstick and he'll run it through the whole block of tofu, fuyi. And then he'll get a bit of chili, a bit of the crispy lard, a bit of that salty, creamy umami onto his chopstick. No? And he'll dig into his rice and he'll just flick it into his mouth. So I thought, oh, he's full of kampung man, a peasant man, you know.
Yeah.
Later on, I ate what he ate. Now I understand why all these old people tell me the backside so nice and neck so nice. And I ate it, you know, just as a foodie to understand it. It's beautiful. Backside, if you just miss that little, the elevator door, you just cut that part.
I know which one you're talking about. I kind of enjoyed
right
that.
Right at the part, the door, you take out the door, you know, the exit door. The rest is all fat, little small little nugget of flesh on there. The Japanese will deep fry this for their
they're selling it these days. Do you know that?
Yeah. It's a delicacy. You just chop out the door, like what I call it.
There's this Muslim chicken rice shop in Boon Keng.
Yeah.
They actually sold that.
Hey, you go to Japanese restaurants, these things are not cheap, you know. Not fantastic really, yeah. Sake and beer, you know. And then when you ate the chicken neck, you eat it like a corn, you nibble around it. You know? So that's a art to enjoying it, you know. You nibble, and then just the whole bone is left. Beautiful, I tell you. And I said, walao. So when I saw him eating that fui, that fermented tofu with the sugar and the chili, and I said, hey, my last dish would probably be this, with a bowl of porridge or even something simpler, which I've never known. It won't be anything fancy, you know. You can ask people for their last dishes. Ask nurses, especially, who have witnessed last dish requests. Stuff are very easy. Kopi o lah.
Simple one, stuff.
Maybe some laksa lah, whatever. My father-in-law died years ago. And then, we knew he was going. The doctor said, there's no much science can do already. So the last day, the doctor, it should be this 2 days. They allowed us to camp in the hospital to wait for that moment. And I was there, he couldn't react. And suddenly, he woke up. He's like, wow, hey, what happened? No. Must be the angel come already. Okay, gua kasi lu 10 minutes. You go and do whatever you want. I charge your battery for 10 minutes before I take you back. Well, open his mouth. Then he asked for stuff. We look at us and we were all there. Yes, Dad, it's okay. Everything is fine. Nobody's in trouble and all that. So to give me a peace of mind. Then he said, I want to tell you all. So we thought, hey, ATM, who's getting this? Who's getting that? ATM number. Where's the card? They said, can you all come? So we go near. It was whispering. And then he said, I want you all to get me laksa.
Oh, laksa.
And kopi o. Say what? Laksa and kopi o. The fellow hardly has a stomach already, you know. So more choice. I ran down, buy laksa, and you could really dribble the sauce of the laksa.
So he
down
did get to taste
side.
It la.
Yeah, just okay. To dribble down to the side. And a cup of kopi o. Hey, laksa and kopi o to Nonya or to Peranakan, it's, you know, a pleasure la. You know, it's like one that last earthly orgasm you have, you know. There are some things, you know, according to some people who tell me stories and all that, the most pleasurable human thing you can do here on earth, among others, besides love, is makan and to stand on this earth.
Mm.
You realize those ghost movie, the ghosts all float, and they don't walk, and you know?
Yeah, of course, yeah.
Those who walk are fake, I mean, the bugger never do his research.
What about the ring?
What ring?
The ghost out. Movie, the fellow walk, crawl, right?
One is, hey, you, when you feel or sense, especially this month, ghost month, you know, you got to see them crawling around. Right? I think there's a universal mystic law. They cannot walk on the earth, man. They cannot walk, they're not allowed to.
Sito, I'm quite disappointed at you actually.
What?
I was expecting your last food would be your wife's cooking now.
I know you're here at the site, yes, that, right? But
you heard that, la. It's the other way around. She would expect her last dish to be my cooking. Then she wash up.
The final time, huh?
Okay, where were we?
Yeah, so
Makan Sutra. Where do you find these names? Yeah, I know where it derives from, but why that name?
I was in Indonesia, so we were staying in this culture attaché, French culture attaché. Guy is on a junior bar because he lives in a very nice house in Jakarta. So we went there and we were staying overnight. And then the next day we're talking. The guy's a foodie. He's the only French I know who will fight me for durian.
A French guy.
French guy. Okay. He loves his food. Really, he can describe. I said, this guy is so passionate. Then I thought, hey, you know, you all got your Michelin, right? Your and then your Gore and Mayo, all these French food guides and all that. And I said, you know, it doesn't apply to Asia, la. You know, this Ang Mo food, la. You know, you got your, you call that your food Bible, right? I said, here, no, hello, here, more like sutra, no Bible, la. So, and here, no food, here's makan, no. So, there you go. We joined the two words together, went back straight away, registered the name.
But see, since you brought up about Western food and all, what do you think about fusion food? Asian food mixed with, you know, anything. Are you a big fan of those?
I'm sure he knows what fusion is, right?
No, yeah, I know, but
put it this way, la. There is fusion and there's nonsense, la. Fusion is a dish you cook that expresses who you are because you know where you came from. If somebody did a very nice nasi lemak and they start putting, like I said, a lobster in there, you know what I mean? If I want to cater to a newer generation who can afford a lobster over their nasi lemak and you know, set them back by $25, $30, nothing wrong with that. It's still expressing who he is. He's just adapting it to a newer generation, which is all right, correct? Then a lot of our dishes, even char kway teow, was fusion many years ago. You don't find char kway teow in China.
Yeah. I've been to China quite a bit of time. I don't see it, man.
It's here. People took the sauce, the kind of sweet sauce that they find in Malaysia or here, and then they adapted it. And they put, or even bar chor mee, that sambal. China has bar chor mee, but it's not done with sambal. China don't have sambal.
Yeah, of course.
So they came here and somebody said, I'm going to replace a chili oil with sambal. I'm going to add the black vinegar. I'm going to put lard, sesame oil, soy sauce, you know, stuff. So that is fusion already. So I think if you ask me fusion, what's fusion? I think a lot of people will try new things. They'll throw anything into the wall. What sticks is what they'll go for. And over the years, over the decades, many things have stuck already. Bak kut teh. Hello, Roti John is fusion, right?
Roti John is fusion.
Yeah, Roti John is Roti John, right? The full name for it is Selamat Makan Roti John. Oh. All Ang Mo was called John, right?
Yeah, once upon a time,
the story, the oral story we got from
our colonies, you mean?
Yeah, the some of these colonialists, some of them are sovereign people today, lah. So very special, lah.
Of course.
So
anyway, just kowtow and move
on. this old hawker, he told me last time Roti John was actually sold by a roti man, you know, in their little bicycle with a box behind. They sell roti, right? With kwaya and all that. He was selling outside the naval bases in naval base, Sembawang area. So one of those days, you know, this Ang Mo would come out and say, could you do us a kind of a sandwich or a burger?
Sure thing, John.
Yes,
sure. Here's a roti for you.
Roti and a fella, you know, hantam la. What meat? What
this is John's roti.
Meatloaf or burger, right? Yeah. You know, they don't know how to do Singaporeans back in the day. Say yes first.
Yeah,
sure, no problem. John, you come back next week, I make for you.
Special.
Bobbing head at the same time.
So they don't take. I think it was a Muslim Indian. They don't take beef.
Bobbing head, that's what
they don't. So he took lamb, minced lamb, and egg.
Yeah.
And then he did into then he dipped the bread into that egg and lamb batter with some spices. And then the fellow bakar, he grilled it. Right. So next day they come back, he give you the selamat makan roti John.
Remember the roti John at Taman Selasih, no?
Yeah, syukur. The daughter also couldn't do it already. This, that is one of the dish you may not see in future.
Yeah. Speaking of this, right, what dish will you not see in the future?
A lot, lah. If you look at...
you think there'll be an extinction of some dishes in Singapore?
I mean, the simple way is if you don't see it on Instagram often, it's going to fade off already. If it's not photographable, if it's not nice, you know, if it's not Instagram friendly, you won't see it. A lot of things that we eat are not. Hawker food is what Bourdain calls char kway teow. When I first took him to eat char kway teow, Bourdain, look at the char kway teow. He took one mouth and he said something I will always quote him for. He said, how can something so ugly be so good?
Well, just look at me then.
The good part, I don't know.
Can we not bring you into the picture?
I try. Next time, okay? Oh, yeah. So what would you not see? Let's say, give you an example, man.
A lot of... I just wrote a piece today. We'll talk about, say, some snacks. You know what it is. You eat it once in a while, but it's not in the inner circle of food. You know, if you look at what people are cooking at home, because they sell what's popular. You have to what? And then those non-inner circle one, ring by ring, they will just fall off. One of them was a rempayek. It's that little cracker with peanut anchovies. You can see it in some people still sell it in big. Those are made by factory, mass produced. Everything all churned up by factory. But to hand make these things, nobody will do it because it's such a difficult to make and cheap to buy snack. But there, you know, I know of some families that still do it. But these things you may not see. So these things may come out of a factory. The other one was I just interviewed this old man. I think he's about the last three hawkers in Singapore selling this Teochew delicacy. It's called Te Tang or pork skin jelly. So they will boil pork and skin till they are bloody soft until the collagen from the skin escapes into the soup. So the soup becomes collagenous. So they chill it half a day, overnight. Next morning, the whole thing becomes a jelly. So the guy just slices the jelly. It's cold. It's like a head cheese or a terrine. I was asking the hawker, how did people eat this back in the day? This doesn't go with anything. No rice, noodle, nothing. What? I said the old man would come, order one whole platter of this, and it's served over ice. So the jelly doesn't melt.
Oh.
So it still tastes like jelly. And then they have it with beer or Chinese tea or kopi. That's it.
You know what I think?
So people don't know how to appreciate.
Yeah.
The appreciation, the low level of appreciation of food is gonna kill food culture.
You know what I think is going to disappear? Rojak Bandung.
I haven't found much. Only the one in the West Coast.
Yeah, there used to be one in Bedok Corner also, remember?
Yeah. So, Rojak Bandung is inspired by the Chinese Kangkong Juhe.
Mm-hmm.
Kangkong and the cuttlefish.
So yes.
They just add it's pretty much the same lah. So you can still get some Chinese version, but a halal rojak bandung habis, can't find.
Yeah.
So
do you go around hawker centers every day?
Maybe
like a social
two
distancing
or three
ambassador.
Days a week, I will go out specifically to check those I hear, read, or saw. Just to check it out. Not everything turns out. A lot of the things that you write on the internet, you know, a bit of fluffy and then, you know, very underwhelming. Nowadays, I work with our reviewers, which we have been working for with years. I trust them more. They tell me, hey, you can try this one. All the little obscure places, I trust them. You know, sometimes I just walk around and look. Hey, alamak, you know, they go.
And you speak to them, huh?
Yeah, I love speaking to them. I love speaking
to them. Like how our MPs go around speaking to the hawkers, you mean?
Who?
Like how our MPs go around speaking to the hawkers.
They do. I hardly see them
election
around.
Time?
No comment. in maybe about just before, a year before election or a month before election. Right?
That's a standard timing.
Every 4 years, I think so. I don't
so know. Which one do you frequent, man? Which hawker center?
Anyway, I'll go anywhere.
Really?
Anywhere.
What's your favorite?
Everywhere. I'll
oh, really?
You got no specific favorite.
No specific. Yeah. So I got this long list in my phone. So when it's like today, I just call up. You know, where should I go? I'll comb this area. Walk around. You know, just smell around. Talk to people. Mm-hmm. You know?
And since you're talking about hawker centers, I think last year we were under the UNESCO, we were appointed. What you call that? Recognized la, under UNESCO.
Right? UNESCO inscription.
Yeah. Do you think it's worthwhile to be under that? Do we deserve that recognition?
Timing is bad la. We got it in the middle of COVID la. Mm-hmm. But you know, when borders reopen, I think we should make a lot of noise about it la. And then people will come. They will say, yeah, hey, what is this UNESCO thing? Nope. And you go to a hawker center, then you must be generating more information for them to go and find out, oh, wow, UNESCO is not really about the makan, about the place, about the people, their craft, their story, and Singaporeans' relationship with it. Even the government has a relationship with it.
No, so the reason I ask is why do we deserve that recognition is because I feel like hawkers are dying trade. Mm-hmm. That's what I feel.
It's gonna die. Is it that's gonna be a while. We still have 20,000 hawkers in Singapore. Mm-hmm. 6,000 under NEA and their public hawker centers like Maxwell and Chinatown and all this, Old Airport. Another maybe close to 20,000 reside in your coffee shops, your canteens, your food courts, your standalone industrial canteens, all mm-hmm. that. So they form the bigger chunk of our food culture. They're gonna be around for a while. Even if it's fade, it's a slow fade. But why let it even be a slow fade?
I mean, that is correct, but do we get enough, let's say, funding from the government? Are they doing enough to support the hawkers?
Here's the thing. You're gonna be good in what you do. Don't ask for handouts. You know, otherwise the government will claim your success.
That's a good point.
Your head belongs to me. Yeah. You have to do whatever I tell you to.
I mean, they're paying rental. Rentals are not
rentals,
cheap.
Rentals
know?
Cheap. In hawker center is cheap.
No.
Oh shit! This is where we differ.
I can get. Say, you go to an Orchard Road.
No. I'm talking about hawker center rental.
Wait. Let me tell you the story you never heard before. You go to Orchard Road malls now. They charge you maybe $10, $12, $15 per square foot.
Yeah.
Okay. I have a friend who just she took on a stall in Newton.
That's prime.
And Newton's rate, Newton's rate is comparable to places like Maxwell and all the high profile places. The stall is just 10 by 10, less than 10 by 10. She's paying $50 a square foot, 50. Orchard, you pay 15. So you tell me what cheap you're talking about. You are only supposed to sell your food cheap.
I am looking at the hawker center in Marine Terrace. How's
in
that?
What?
Marine Terrace. That's
you're
about $1,000.
I mean, if you're old hawker, you get the old rates, you're paying, I think they all average about, you know, close to 1,000 plus 2,000 now. Even the hawker centers that will be taken on by NTUC, I think their default charges is around 2,000 rand. That's $20 a square foot. More expensive than some places in Orchard Road.
You know what's the thing that annoys me about hawker centers? The thing is, if you are a stall owner, right, it's fine that you pay the rental, but you got to pay for the guys that clear the
That's normal. Yep. That's normal. Even private food courts, you have to pay.
What about those, let's say if I want to clear my own dish or I want to have styrofoam, how's that?
Styrofoam.
Paper plates.
This hawker culture is run by, ironically, hawker culture is run by the Ministry of Environment.
Okay.
Ironic, okay? Yeah. And then the Ministry of Environment, for all its world-class floating solar power panel and all the all the fireworks stuff, still allow hawkers to use styrofoam and plastics. And one single use. So why?
I thought we were going into that direction of recycling and, you know, environment.
Why?
I
mean, why can't they just say cannot? Don't use reusable. You can use multiple use chopstick. Good old days, you know, wash lah. you know, or you have some kind of a washing facility, la. Or better still, people bring their own. Just bring a reusable chopstick and spoon, put in your bag, you know, it's a little, there are little containers, little kits like this you can use anywhere, it's so easy. Why aren't they encouraging this? I really don't know. Especially the styrofoam one. When I go and buy meals for my charity, you know, meal donations, you know, I go there, hey, buy 100 packets from this woman on this swatting flight. And she take out 100
styrofoam.
I gotta buy from her, I feel bad, you know. Why can't they just use reusables or, you know, even wax paper, you know, I don't understand.
Banana leaf, use banana leaf.
Yeah, good old days, they use leaf. Even those paper, those wax paper, boleh, what those days, we put nasi padang in wax paper.
Yeah, correct. Yeah, yeah, that's fine. The wax paper is fine.
Put a leaf inside and all that. I don't know why they can change to all this plastic. Now, whenever I buy food that comes with a plastic container, I got enough to set up a shop now. Of reuse, wash with lemon zest, you know. Yeah, I reuse them all the time at home, you know, tapao. I use it at least 2, 3, 4 times before, you know, it brittles, it cracks or something. And then, you can put water, feed, give the dog or put a plant in there. Plant some mint or something you put in your kitchen. You know, they are useful. They're not designed for single use.
And you started out taking photos. Am I right?
Yeah.
Still do. And back then, I mean, I'm not saying you're not good looking now. You were handsome, Sia, last time.
Yeah, I know.
What?
No, it's true.
Oh, really? Yeah? I've not seen him when he was young.
Come on, man.
So what kind of photos you take?
Yeah, this you gotta hear from bodies, him. Models,
dead bodies.
Oh, yeah, dead bodies. Sometimes back in the day when I was covering, I was in the Straits Times shooting. Straits Times are not SPH. Straits Times are independent.
Please, I take umbrage. You take on that statement.
Good, you're taking umbrage. We took umbrage very long ago. We took umbrage when they switched it to SPH. That's why I quit. There were crime. There were real crime. There were murders. There were gila people taking parang, chasing people in the HDB flats.
What year was this? In the
80s
or what?
80s, yeah? Early 80s. Yeah. And then there were, you know, when I get calls early in the morning, when I did my 6 a.m. shift, is, hey, can you go straight to this coffee shop? Oh, this wanted assassin was killed by the... was gunned down already in a gunfight. We went there before the police, you know.
Oh, shit.
So the SWAT team, they went there, boom, zao liao. Then the cleanup team will come, like in the movies. Right, huh?
Yeah.
So I went there before the cleanup team. They were just closing. I said, the guy was lying in a... the guy is Ahwat, one of the most wanted... You can Google, one of the most wanted... Wanted murderers. So the guy shot this chicken rice seller, point blank. He went to his... coffee shop. He went there, he asked for, he buy, you know, $2, $3 chicken rice. Then he asked for extra soup and extra chili and extra everything. And you know, the hawker get fed up. No, pukai, only one packet. Shot the fella like that.
Because of that.
Because you don't have extra chili. So, we hawkers, y'all be careful. Yeah, chili, you better give
as much chili as you can.
So, anyway, it was very interesting. Those were the very nice days. I shot that. And I did fashion also.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, those days were the modeling days of Jazreel Low, Zoe Tay.
Jazreel Low, I've not heard this name for ages.
Remember that beautiful
name?
Man. Yeah, a lot of these top models all... mommy, auntie already now.
Yeah,
but those were very nice days. And I was seeing this burgeoning culture then, you know. Wow, Singapore, these modeling agencies and all that. Wow. And then some of these, Hanis. She lives in a castle in France now. I photographed her. Beautiful to photograph and be near. Yeah. Very nice. She smells so good.
And she smells so good.
She smells so good.
How you smell your food?
Lovely. Okay. And then this model Bonnie Hicks, who died.
Bonnie
in the
Hicks.
Plane.
Yeah. Okay,
she
died. MI185, right?
Yeah, I work very closely with her. She modeled for a lot of us and loved it. I did a lot of features. We did fashion, travel, news, hardcore news. Those days were fun. You know, people would tip the media off before the police. They would say, "Hey, got this." Gambling casino in the forest.
Oh.
Got generator, got phone lines, got call girls on there, you know. the public will tip us off, no? Before they don't even tip the police off. Then we got to tip the police off. Then the when we say, how we wanna cover? Say, come, let's go, let's go. So we went there with the police. We meet you there. Then our guys, he asked me to go to this place. I don't even know where, which part of the forest. You go downstairs. There'll be a car waiting for you to get. Go downstairs. You know who picks the photographer up? The petrol car. We went to cover with them. We had such a good relationship. We had such good stories back in the day. Today it's a different relationship the media has with the authorities. So the challenge is gone. So I no longer, you know, look forward to that. So quit. I went to do commercial photography. Then, you know, very often, before I started marketing, I did a good 10 over years doing commercial photography. Very, very good money. You know, but I always had this thing for food. You know, I would, every time I go out to do an assignment on my old trusty Vespa, lunch would be a lovely, deliberate half to 1 hour break wherever I am. I say, hey, this spot. And how I learned about food was from all these old guns, all the Lao Jiao writers, photographers. They were pager me. Pager, Xiangka, pager, Sitovia, you
that
know.
One, yeah.
Oh, I'm Clementi, I just shot this one. You give the film to Rashid, the writer or whatever, asking to send back. So I thought he was going to send me for another assignment. I've got the film with the back days was a film.
Yeah, yeah.
So then he said, oh, yeah, what's the next one? Where are you now? Clementi. Okay, Clementi, you know, block. You know, the downstairs down there. Go on. Just, you know what? Lor mee or chicken rice or I don't know what. Say, hey, you go and buy. Make sure the father is cooking, not the mother. Father. The father, then you go and cook. Oh, very specific. Detailed. No. Then River Valley. Hey, don't come back. Don't come back. You go and give the film to the driver. Send back. You go to River Valley, the nasi padang. Oh, yeah, Zamachi. I want rendang.
Wait,
I
remember this. Zion Road, eh? Zion Road.
They moved to Zion Road. They were at River Valley. Oh, beautiful, man. So I learned all these kind of things, and I started, hey, food is a story not very well told, especially our hawker food. I travel a lot, but I realized nowhere in the world has this kind of hawker culture. Malaysia, you say, is similar.
Yeah, I was just going to get
similar lah, tak similar lah.
Really? Yeah.
You rarely find the harmony of food. Melayu, Cina, Indian, all that in one place. I can sit down with a Malay and say, hey, makcik, apa ini? Oh, pedas ka? They will tell you, Malaysia, there's still this segregation, Malay and the rest of the world.
Yeah.
Chinese, PJ, PJ area is Chinese. This one, so not that, you know, got some places not as prevalent. We take this for granted, you know. Correct.
That's a good point.
Indian eating in a Chinese, nobody bats an eye.
Yeah.
You know, Chinese fella, you know, lining up for some hardcore Melayu store, nobody bats an eye.
Yeah.
We take that for granted.
That's a very good point, man.
Yeah. So this part of our culture.
Yeah. We actually took that for granted, that's right.
Because
through the probably numerous times that we've been in Malaysia, and we only go to that joint, whereas it's a group of maybe of the same race, the same food, you know?
Yeah, that's correct.
Malay food, and that's that. And even if it's Indian Muslim food, you got to go somewhere else, right?
Yeah, Malay food.
In Singapore, no, everybody eats everything. Nice, we come. You only fear that the food is no good or too expensive. That's the only thing you fear, right? Yeah. So I went to Kelantan once to do some research, go and makan, meet up some friends, invite me over because famous, man. I want to write about Kelantan. But I went on to find out about their nasi dagang and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
so
right.
One of the local friends out there, in fact, my wife's friend, took me to go and makan. And then, they said, this is the keropok leko. You know that long...
Terengganu, right?
Terengganu area also. Went there,
with the chili.
Kelantan, Terengganu, went there, eat. And then we wandered into one really hardcore Malay eatery area to eat something nasi. I never heard of it, you know. I must go and try. I went there, I'm alien. No, they look at me. Which planet you from? No. I really feel naked. I really feel like, you know. So you get a feeling. Then she also, you know, try to be friendly. You know, like eat, get out. You know. So yeah. Singapore, you don't get that.
One mic stand. Dead.
Speaking of Malaysia, you are the best person to ask about this. Malaysia nasi lemak or Singapore nasi lemak?
You want to start a war or something?
If the only wars the world must fight is food wars. There is never a loser.
Claiming their rights.
There's never a loser when you compare this one, chicken rice.
Obviously, people both try both.
Both the competitors plus the foodie is the winner. So the only war you must fight is a food war.
Yeah. So what's your take on this, man? I couldn't ask Ashraf or anyone else.
I've eaten good and bad ones there. I've eaten good and bad ones here. But I compared with traditional ones. I tell you, hands down, I ate in this little store. My wife knows about it. It's in Penang. So we were holidaying down there one near Gurney Drive.
Gurney
Drive. Yeah. No.
Not that one.
Near there, the Gurney Drive. Okay, stay away, that one. You also go Newton. then this little van pulls up. Then the machi and the abang take out one table, put beside the van, then one whole pail of sambal came out, one few bags of ikan bilis, and then this pail of rice, and then a fella lay on the table as big as this table that we are talking on now, and he lays out squares of banana leaf. Then the sister come up, pop, he cups every banana leaf with rice. Then he put a half egg down there, and then this was the magic. Egg, rice, and they put cucumber, and the magic was this: the guy took that pail, wash floor, that kind of pail,
the mop one,
wet sambal.
Okay.
Then this huge few bags of, I think they pre-buy on, ikan bilis, crispy, dry ikan bilis. Then right before you, they pour this 4-5 huge bags of ikan bilis into that pail of wet
sambal.
What happens?
They mix it
dries
up
the sambal because of absorb the liquid. Then the sambal thickens up a bit while the ikan bilis is still crispy. For the scoop, top, one scoop of that sambal onto every one of them. So then bungkus on the spot. So we bought 2 packets. We walked to Burgundy and sit down there by the beach, makan. After the second mouth, I asked my wife, "Hey, how much you have in your pocket?" So about 500-600 ringgit. That's all we had, the rest. And I said, "Hey, I want to go there. I want a guy to teach me how to make the sambal."
There's no way he's going to teach you that, right? Did he?
Did he reveal
the secret? You sebo story lah. Yeah. You know, you're from Singapore. You respect the bugger, kau tahu a bit. You know, say you're fantastic, world's best. Nasi lemak, you tak tahu saya siapa ya. All that kind of thing. Then, went back there. And I just walked across the road. And, half an hour, I came back. Habis. Ciao ya.
Ciao.
Finish ciao
already.
Shit.
Cannot forget. Then there's another one. Okay, I did it for my show, my food surprise, my old Discovery TV show, where I go up to hawkers without permission. Just whack on it. So this particular stall sells, it's called Ali Nasi Lemak in Penang also.
Okay.
We went there. Oh, lemak. Have you ever had nasi lemak? Very nice, soft nasi lemak in banana leaf with some egg, some ikan bilis and all that. And the fella put things like sambal prawns, okay? And then you got chicken and the fried fish and all that. Right? The killer one was deep fried salted fish. Sambal salted fish.
Salted fish, Never tried that.
Oh, Lord, you bite that bit. Your left hand, you hold that. Salted fish is no bigger than a small little cube of chocolate. It's a small little thing. You hold on your left hand, you nibble a bit, and then your right hand, you scoop the rice inside. Well, Lord, you sit down there, you thank the heavens for turning you into a human being, I tell you. We will leave nothing for the cats and dogs to follow up, finish the whole thing. It is so good. It's so good. This kind of simple nasi lemak Singapore tak ada.
Tak ada.
You have the leaf one, but it's just lost, the usual thing. But the sambal also cannot fight. This kampung style nasi lemak, Malaysia win. But you are talking about fancy, got black sotong, got all that.
The fusion you mean.
Don't know what kind of chicken lobster, chicken wings. Singapore wins hands down.
Yeah, but I wouldn't want any of those.
You sit by the roadside. Hey, mama, teh tarik alia satu kurang manis. And then the nasi lemak in front of you already, it's on the table. You just take, right?
Yeah, correct. Yeah.
And then the fellow will count how many wrapper you ate, right?
Yeah.
And then it's still quite warm, when you eat. Because the thing is, the supply just came, and you eat these kind of things for a snack at about 3-4 o'clock. It's so lovely, lah. Singapore, unfortunately, lost its street side food culture. Yeah.
You know, I think you're the best person to ask this. You know, there's a saying that the way to a man's heart is through his stomach.
Okay, what about it?
Is that how your wife finds you?
The way to her heart is also via my food. Ah. For me, it's not just through the stomach. What are you going to put inside? What are you going to put inside my stomach? I have a lot of questions. Yes, yes. Food, if you learn how to cook and you put in that little extra attention and passion to cook, and you weekends, I invite my friends to my house, weekends, whatever small group, two fella, invite them, you know, today two, tomorrow two, and all that, or five, which is now. And then you cook a meal, they sit and eat. It's very pleasurable. People do come together right now over me goreng, or you know. And if you do it well, and then you tell your friends how you do it, and they'll see you cooking. You know, when I invite, always when they come, I say you have to wait. So I'm gonna cook the last part and finish up. So it's nice. They watch you cook. They ask you. Then they'll share with you. Hey, you should put a bit of that. It's so pleasurable. You have no idea.
See, the thing is, you've met so many people, and you've invited people to your house, and you've met this amazing celebrity chef or whatever they call it. I don't know what he is. Anthony Bourdain. You've known him for a long time.
Yeah, I know him for blasted years that he's dead. I know him for about 20 years already.
Yeah, he's like the freaking gangster when it comes to street food.
But he's got a damn good heart. He's a very, he's a very dark person, but he's a
but how is
damn
he like? Yeah, that's the
thing. He's got a
penchant
for the little people. He hates so sombong, big atas people. First time he called me, his agent called me, actually, his book publisher. You know, the time I rock star, food rock star back in the day, right?
Yeah. You are
so
still now.
Everybody's, so then he calls me, he says, oh, hello, my name is so-and-so. We are behind Anthony Bourdain's show, The Cook's Tour, and this is the first time he's gone out of America.
Yeah, I've read that book, yeah.
He came to this part of Asia, he's come to Singapore, and Tony says he cannot do his show in Singapore without having you in the show. He will not leave Singapore without you in the show. And Barry knows his words now. So I just finished filming that day, I think. So I finished, and it was like 5 o'clock. I'll finish. Then he wants to meet at 6 or 7, right? Then he calls me at lunch. I take the call. Then I said, sure. But I can only do dinner about 7 o'clock. Then he said, okay. Mr. Bourdain will meet you. Where shall he meet you? I said, I'll let you know later. I don't know what I feel like eating. I'll see you later. Then I hung up. Then first thing, I turned to my wife and I said, who the hell is Anthony Bourdain? I have to entertain. You call me, you take the trouble to track me down. I have to entertain you. So anyway, so I said, I don't care. They are paying what? So we go for what I feel like eating tonight, crab bee hoon. You know, in Geylang Lorong 35, Sin Huat, the famous one, all the world celebrities go, including Jackie Chan, Michelle Yeoh, all the top three Michelin star go there. And the cook is down there, he don't care who you are, he wear Wellington boots. Sometimes he's topless, you know. Just wear his shorts, Wellington boots. You can't, he take a, hey, what, just me, you know. You know, but now he has a wear shirt. NEA a whole lot more stricter now. And then and when I was there, I said, I'll meet you there at 7. Tony was already there half an hour before me. And I realized this about Tony. He's very, very punctual. Even to the last time I filmed with him, he was on the dot, you know. So I asked him a simple question. This is the last time that I filmed him. Tony, you know, he just flew 24 hours from New York, came here, he filmed, next day, bam, he filmed. I said, wow, hey, you just flew in last night, today you are looking so fresh for the show. How you do it? His answer is so good, because I'm a pro. Yeah, talk cock. But you have to be a pro. And then he did this very well. Anyway, we were eating down there, and then I met him, and then the first thing he did, he was help my book. I think it was my second edition of the Makan Sutra book. Then he opened to this foreword that I wrote in the book. First thing he says, hey, Mr. Sutra, I have a lot of regard for you. I know what you're doing. And this is what you wrote is exactly how I feel. I said, what? He circled this sentence that I wrote in the foreword that says, food on screen and on print is an oxymoron. Food must be devout. Then he said, this is so true. Wow, can you sign my book? He signed my book, I signed his book. Now we sat down, two of us ate $700.
$700?
Down there, the guy, this is a dirtiest, most rundown coffee shop that sells the most expensive seafood in Singapore. Everything is alive.
The but did he enjoy the food?
Oh, he gushed, you know. So he with the agent was just picking out balance from the side. So we two ate. Wow, we combed through what we call the MRT prawns. The prawns is sliced and then open up like a MRT track. And then there is a gong gong with the bloody sauce. It's so complex. And then we had fish, we had crabs, all the works and the last. And then he was gushing, scallops, everything, black beans, gushing. And then the last, and he was like kind of full after like four bottles of beer. The pièce de résistance, the ultimate dish came, the crab bihun. And Danny will only serve the crab bihun last. Because if he serve the crab bihun first, all these other dishes will be nice.
Won't go, yeah.
It will go downhill. So Tony, he tell me, Tony, this is the the number one dish, and then they film and all that. Then he took one mouth of the bihun instead of mouth. What the fella put down his fork, he take one glass of beer, he told the camera, point your camera to me. He says, oh, you know, I've been given the five-star treatment at Le Benedon, blah, 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 blah. I've traveled around the world. I've seen everything. But, you know, tonight, after a meal like this, you know, I really won't mind. I'll be happy if the world ended right now. He said that. And you know, my mother, my heritage and all that. She still made me eat frogs. My God, he's the only one who could dredge out the reluctant French in me. So I was on eating, and he turned the mic to me. She told, you know, what have you got to say for yourself for taking me to a place like this, you know? And you know, how do you walk all the way into my heart and all that, you know? Then I was like, hey, one prawn in my mouth. And then I turned up and I said, why you talk so much when there's food on the table? You eat lah. My mother say, you eat whatever is on your table because you don't know when your next meal is coming from. Why you talk so much? And the fellow, he was so impressed. He turned this little conversation of ours into a chapter into his book called The Nasty Bits. The last chapter was called Die Die Must Try.
Oh, really? Yeah, he actually used that.
The book is called The Nasty Bits. I think it was his second or third book. It's called Die Must Try. He wrote about this. He was so impressed. And we hit off from there. He tells me all his secrets. Some stuff till today I cannot tell you. So,
So well, you were still in contact back then with him almost like what? Weekly, monthly kind of thing?
Yeah, I fly up to New York. Sometimes I have dinner with him. Oh, catch up. You know, when he was dating his second wife. My wife and I had dinner with him in New York, and you know, all the people came fawning over him. So I said, just send out the food, I don't care, bring it out. Whoa, you know, it was nice. He's very real. When you talk about the little people, the plight and the struggles of the little people, wow, the guy feels it. You tell him about the hawkers, you know, he feels for the hawkers.
I mean, you're also a legend in Singapore, right? I mean, do you like, you know, let's say you go to a hawker center, you have like four or five bodyguards beside you while you're eating. No,
my bodyguards just want to eat only. they guard the food, not me. I wouldn't want to live a life like that, where you have bodyguards tailing you.
And I have this question at the back of my mind. It's regarding the home-based business. Do you think this affect the hawker out there, like stealing their lunch?
Okay, this home-based business came about once when I think Singapore was not doing very well. It was in a slum, some kind of a recession or a technical recession. And a lot of people started cooking at home on their own. And then you go and you pick it up. It was before delivery services. I knew that. So the reason was, I think some people have to supplement their income. And they didn't sell expensive things, normal things. You know, a little bit more because they use better ingredients at home and all that. So I said, you know, it's right. So in a way, we also get to know that people from home are cooking very good stuff. Then, you know, COVID came along, more people went into home business, those who got retrenched, furloughed.
It's like a boom during this COVID.
And then, first it was Lawless, right? And then after that, Cookie, Lady, and then there's problems and all that. And then there were a lot of talk about regulating them. How are they regulated? So today the situation is this. I think SFA came out last week or a week, 2 weeks ago to say, we do not license home cooks. I read it in the paper. I didn't make this up. So You know, here's the thing. Why you have two standards for hawkers and cooks who are licensed professionals who go for food handling courses and who has to wear gloves, who has to in the eyes of the public, and you know, the mask must be over the nose when they cook and all that. And and you don't do that for home kitchens. You open home kitchen, you just cook and sell, no?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they just tell you, okay,
anything goes, man.
Just going to read the rules and regulations online. Then there's some, oh, must tell you, must wear gloves, must wash your hand, temperature, all that you do. Who's going to check on them? Nobody will check on them.
Yeah.
So if the auntie go and potty, clean and change the baby and then come back to cook without washing or without wearing gloves, who knows?
Yeah.
Yeah, and then if the frozen goods is not stocked at the proper temperature, cooked food and raw food, you don't separate cooked food on top, raw food below, and all your handling, your knives, so that where do you store, how do you clean all that? If not done properly, a lot of things can happen. And you know what? These things go to the public. The public will eat something that you will sell from home. Nobody knows. Nobody's really there to check on you. Whether you did choose, get the, you know, your meat expired or not.
Yeah.
Do you have the first in, first out storage thing or not? All the professional licensed people are subjected to it when they sell things to the public. Why aren't these home kitchens doing it? I'm all for home kitchens, but mind you, I'm not for the fact that you are not governed.
How do we even regulate this, man?
Hello, now they can go to your house and check your five people or not without your permission. No? Can't they just walk into the kitchen and say, hello, where's your glove?
True.
So even if this, you know, social distancing at home law, you must still spot check people. You know, you don't have to wait for a few people to die and then say, okay, there's a rule. If you're cooking at home, I expect you to have a CCTV on to show your cooking area.
But that's the thing with our government, right? They need to wait for something to happen first.
Then, so when you are cooking, turn on your camera. Sorry, what did you say?
No, that wouldn't be nice.
Yeah, I'm coming for serious you, here. No, you don't wait until you know buy something for your child and your stomach upset, you know what, and then hospitalized on ventilator because they saw something on Grab or something and they go and buy and then come back.
I think recently there's a case, right, about the home-based business. I think a few people fell sick or something.
Yeah, the cookie again, the cake and the sugar, something. You know, I say, you know, I'm all for people doing home business, but I'm not for them not being regulated. You don't charge license, rental. It's all right, but there must be governed rules. You wanna cook, and they say, okay, there should not be commercial, and then your wet and dry area must all separate and all that. There must be a camera down there. When you are cooking for the public, turn it on. Otherwise, turn it off for privacy. If you are cooking commercial, you make sure everything is intact, your gloves, so people can, anything happen, they can trace it back.
So your issue is the double standard, basically.
His issue is basically the cleanliness of it. That's his worry.
Oh, you want to eat suspicious food? Not. Who wants?
Yeah.
It may look very good on, it's easy to make things look good on TikTok or Instagram, you know. But how was it prepared? You think the fella, when nobody's checking, wear glove. How many? Sometimes I also tell these older hawkers who are retiring, it's going to be a serious problem when this bunch, a lot of them, hawkers, they push 60, 70, can't stand anymore. You know, they can't catch up with the digital rules and all these NEA new rules on this. They say, go la, pu yao chua, suda la, you know, chukop, ma. What are they going to do? They still have some energy left. So I tell them, hey, machi, pachi, or auntie, uncle, why don't you cook at home? You're already a seasoned pro. What? Cook Friday, Saturday, Sunday rest. People love to eat on weekends. You know, or rest Monday to Friday, cook Saturday, Sunday, and then do delivery. Still got some pocket money to earn. And more importantly, you are still preserving the food culture.
During your walks to all these hawker centers, do you see younger, new people taking up this trade?
But not enough. Some they start, of course they make a lot of noise. They go online, social media, etc., etc., and then they disappear after 3 months, 6 months. Tak boleh tahan lah.
Or maybe they feel the pressure from the seniors down there.
No lah. Let me quote Rui Feng. Rui Feng is a very young mother, millennial. She graduated, don't know what, she threw away her degree, gave up her corporate life to continue selling prawn noodles in her parents' shop. I said, why you want to do this? He said, milk money. I want to pay back. This noodle plate of prawn noodle brought me up. So I'm paying back. You know, who would say something like that, you know? And she took over the whole stall. And she said, idea also for me to continue this legacy and for my parents to quit and relax. So initially, the parents helped out to ease her in. And then they had, she hired some young, she made, oh, I'm happy to pay you. You know, you can open a branch after you work with us. You know, it's blah, 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 and all that, you teach them. So there were young couples that came, young folks that came to work with her, you know. Within 3 weeks, 1 month, bye-bye.
Mm.
We can't take it.
And that's
because it's tough. And there's no manpower to help you.
Exactly, I was going to get to that. The manpower
you have
issue
to get up
have.
At 2 a.m. Yeah. Cut, boil, cut the peel, the prawns, braise and boil the bones and the prawn heads and all that. That's a lot of work. And by the time you start selling your first bowl at 6, 7 o'clock, you're half dead. No?
Yeah. And you got to sleep early and then carry on that shit the next day. And
ideally, in most other countries, where it's a real country with mountain and real rivers are not longkang. You have a bigger population. I can hire people and pay them fairly decently. Can you come in the morning? Help me peel these prawns and all that. So I'll come in later, like maybe 4 or 5 a.m. and I'll put the whole show together. You boil the water, you get everything prepped ready for me. You know, and you know, if we are to pay some of these experienced, younger, or even mid-aged foreign cooks and chefs, $1,000, $2,000, this burger will fly here. You know? I know of, say, folks from Malaysia or even Indonesia, Vietnam, even Philippines, trained, very experienced professionals who have their work with their own knives, who wear a uniform, who are very proud of what they do, who will be so happy to earn that $1,000 over $2,000.
That's the thing with the system, you see. I mean, I've seen, obviously, hawker tenders cannot get foreigners. I mean, these are the foreigners that we need to help out.
It's like our construction industry. They
exactly,
realize
that's the thing,
Singaporeans don't want to be contractors, right? Yeah. Construction workers. That's why
the
they ring fence that area. I mean, I wouldn't say they're paid very well. 800, 900 and all that.
Yeah.
Why don't you ring fence the F&B or the small retail, micro retail business who needs frontline people to be paid a decent salary. Decent enough so that it doesn't impress on the hawker's operation cost that will drive up his bowl of rehearsing for next year's 2022.
Yeah, it's like a circus, right?
Yeah, next year's 2022 National Day. Like
that was,
So anyway, so
we're gonna pay back, man, because this year we didn't have that shit, right?
We got I need two kacang putih.
I didn't watch.
Flies doing some cross and all that. No one's a big.
By the way, if the listeners don't hear, the freaking jet just flew past the building.
I'm sure they heard. Anyway, where was I? Why don't we allow these people to come empower our hawkers and our restaurants? You know, why are we saying, oh, you need quota?
Yeah.
You want to hire China? 9. You want to hire Malaysia? 4.
Yeah.
That means you want to hire one Malaysian, you need 4 Singapore hawker assistants before you can hire one. Seriously?
Yeah.
Who in Singapore is educated?
And the levy is a killer.
Is thought to be a, I would say, ring fence this. Forget the, screw the levy. Because you believe food should be affordable. You want everybody to work their asses off, right? And not cook at home, right? Go home, rest, eat hawker food, eat something simple, affordable, go home, right?
Yep.
Then please make the industry affordable also. Give them the manpower that they need so they can keep their culture affordable.
Yeah.
Till day, you do not hear a reason why they don't let hawkers hire, especially the public hawkers, hire foreigners.
Yeah, hawker centers cannot hire. Yeah,
you
food court
can. You need 4-1, 9-1, 6-1.
Coffee shop is okay,
But you still need quota.
Yeah, of course.
One store, what, you want to hire 6 Singaporeans before you hire 1 Filipino?
Hire 6 phantom workers. Oh shit.
I'm sure they know about the phantom workers.
Yeah.
But I do not know why they want to address the problem. It says, forget it. The reason they put phantom workers is because they want to hire foreigners.
Exactly, yeah.
Six phantom workers is already what, $1,000. We just pay the basics for them, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So I don't understand. So if anybody's listening, please give me an answer. Stop telling us we will be further tightening the tap on manpower. Good luck. So proud for them to say. And then you do not know that you are killing. I know this hawker in Chinatown, he does roast duck, char siu and roast pork and all that.
Yeah.
One day, you know, a very lively guy, he'll talk, he'll say, oh, lama, he talk, you know. And then one day he came, he looked half dead, you know. So I asked him, hey, what happened to you? He disappeared for a week, I think. And the sister was cooking. The sister only can cook some stuff. The roast duck, the sister cannot do because that one is very difficult to do. Mm. So my brother not back. My brother came back next week. So I went back next week to eat again. The roast duck is very good. And I said, why you look half dead? Because he is half dead. He just had a liver operation. Liver operations are no small joke, no. Mm. You die or you get 3 days after the operation he came back. He was given 3 months MC. He came back three days after. He can't take the three months. And I said,
got nothing to live on.
So I said, and then the guy struggling, no. You try, you ask this bloody overpaid buggers and make decisions like this. You try lah. Go for your liver operation. You see, lah, you ask, they give you 3 months MC, you ask for one more year.
What if you die before that period of time? MC, insurance doesn't cover, right?
I have no idea, man.
Yeah, got to find that out.
So, they're lamenting. The hawkers cannot afford to go sick unless they fall down and die.
Yeah.
I've known hawkers who die in their shop now.
Really?
Three of them just collapse like that from stroke. One of them is the Cheng Teng fella in Bedok.
Oh man, that guy is so kind.
And then another one was this old man.
He ran
a restaurant. Then he closed it. He ran a hawker store in China called Mitzi's.
Yeah.
Then the fella is so old, you know, he was moving around and he's just pottering around. Mm-hmm. Work that assistants can do, right? He slipped and fell, died.
Did the Cheng Teng guy died at a shop?
Yeah.
Man, that's just so sad. He's just a kind guy.
I mean, they would be happy to just show up. Okay, I'm going to put the you know, top chefs, you know, the chef come in, they put the thing together,
yeah, yeah.
You know, like Gordon Ramsay, shout, and all that.
Yeah.
You don't ever see Gordon Ramsay cleaning, washing up, but. But you want to be a chef, hawker Singapore, you have to clean up. The clean up and wash up Gordon Ramsay.
Yeah.
You're not friends with Gordon Ramsay?
Okay, la, I met him once. Not my cup of tea. He's a nice guy. La. I mean, yeah. We contact each other for whenever we need stuff from each side. La.
Mm.
Yeah, but affinity is Bourdain. Yeah.
Have you been to his hell kitchen?
No, I haven't met him in New York. He came here, you know, we spoke a little bit. He knows who I am. I know who he is. So they called me up to help curate some of his shows and gigs here.
Mm.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Should get Salt Bae next.
Salt Bae? Who?
Salt Bae. Salt Bae.
Well, you know, not government.
Temasek invested
200 million US for a 17%.
They should have invested in you, no?
No, there are better people to invest. I tell you, 17% stake for 200 million US, which is just a sneeze for them lah. But then again, your 200 million, why are you going to invest in a bugger who's just famous on internet?
Yeah, meat soaked in and then, butter.
And then just you kill a cow and barbecue it. Nah.
Yeah.
We got restaurant chains and groups here that do very, very good. So why can't you just sing 50, 100 million to them here and help them expand?
Expand,
you know,
yeah, globally.
Like,
yeah.
Like Lo Lik Peng. He owns so many restaurants. Burn Ends he owned the two Michelin's restaurant called Andres and a host of others. He's opening up in Australia. I said, why do you want to invest? You want, you know, fancy little things like this. You may not like hawker food, but at least we've got restaurant group chains I need to invest in. Why not them? Why one fellow who's got 10 million followers on Instagram
on Facebook
and selling
and Instagram, yeah.
selling beef.
Which is well done beef.
And beef, you know, like it's a climate nightmare, right?
Yeah.
The kind of fart they produce can power a jet, no?
Mm. Yeah.
So, yeah, so many issues. So sometimes I also think the food culture here, if you want to do it well, it should be a multi-ministry effort, multi-government, you know, that takes the whole village kind of powering, you know, not just NEA, you know, MCCY should be in there. The tourism folks should be in there. ESG should be in there for expansion. And education should be in there. If you want, if you say, hey, I want to sell, I want to be the next biryani king of the world.
Yeah.
I want to open, I have concept, I have fancy, you know, all kinds of stuff. Where are you going to learn to do that?
Wait, I thought the government has this diploma in, I think, some poly or if, I don't know where they are, read that to become a hawker
have
or something.
Have you heard success stories coming out of this?
Not yet.
You see? They only
maybe
tell you
Talib
what they,
can be
what
one of the success.
They only tell you what the kind of course. They build the infrastructure, la, but inside
let me tell you what I did. I went to China to learn how to make pool noodle. I'm not kidding you, man.
And?
I did. And then someone opened a pool noodle shop in Singapore.
You should have.
No, someone actually opened up a pool noodle shop in Singapore.
Then why didn't you?
I got disheartened.
Why? Because this is a country.
Because my concept, my idea is supposed to be the first pool noodle halal shop in Singapore. And then
you
I got disheartened.
You
so I just
mama pool noodle lah.
That'll be interesting, right? Have you seen a Chinese guy make prata? No, what?
Got Chinese guy make prata.
Oh, there is?
Yeah. I went to this shop in West Coast, those 24-hour mama shop, right?
Yeah.
Very popular. I wound up there one evening. And this is years ago, no, when China people were working down here. So we had manpower problems then, really.
Yeah.
So I ordered, abang, what you want? So I say, mi goreng satu, and then teh, whatever lah. The fellow went to the kitchen. Chow mian one!
Ika chow mian one!
Satu! How? Mei wan ti!
Hey, goreng.
So, yeah, mi goreng, prata all have already. But la mian.
La mian.
You might well just jolly will be the world's first. La.
Yeah, that's the thing, man.
Yeah, and
I actually know how to make punulos.
For our Japanese friends, guess where ramen came from?
Where?
They call it ramen because Japanese fellow cannot pronounce la mian.
Oh, wow. Makes sense, huh?
Yeah, man. La mian means pool noodle.
It is about that. Yeah. Ramen in Japan is only has about 100-year history. So you read about it, of course, they want to acknowledge. Japanese friend of mine said, this is the story. Japan is very close to Fujian in China.
Okay.
Look at the map, they're very close.
Yeah.
So you know there's a connection. People can just hop over. So apparently there was this restaurant worker lah, you know, working in the back of the kitchen type, was cooking, helping in a Japanese restaurant. And he, during one of the meal breaks, the fella made his own la mian. And then he put it in a broth to eat lah. And the Japanese says, what is this? So, this is la mian. Ramen? No,
la mian.
La mian. Yeah, ramen. Pusa, la mian. Yeah, ramen. Ramen. Nah, ramen. Nah, la mian. Yeah, ramen.
About,
so it become la mian.
Interesting, man.
We should do a cartoon on this. Ramen.
I actually went all the way to Xinjiang, man.
Well, you should do lah. Don't stop, man.
Really, huh?
It will be a story. And then once you do that, who says you cannot evolve that in putting it in some masala or something,
yeah,
you know, curry,
you
ramen.
You can improvise this.
Yeah, masala,
like
ramen,
that.
No.
That'd be fusion idea.
Yeah, but that's
you
fine.
You are expressing who you are.
Yes, exactly, yeah.
Who are you, Talib?
I am you. Have you seen that shit?
I am you.
Have you seen that shit?
No.
Rush Hour 3.
Rush Hour. That clown, funny. So yeah, authenticity is really an expression of who you are.
Yeah.
Provided you know who you are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you see, the thing is, of all the things you say online, there are obviously good feedbacks and there are obviously negative feedbacks.
Yeah, like what?
I don't know.
I know.
People criticize you and for what you do and things like that. How's this going on, man, for you?
You
don't give a shit, right? You just want to carry
on.
Oh,
you mean negative comment? Yeah, like
just
like some people in life, you know, are toxic. You don't. Some people you meet, you don't even know. You're like, I don't want to be friends with this guy. You've met, right?
Yeah.
You don't even know the guy. You pass by only the aura only. I'll 10-foot pole, please. You know.
What about us? First time you see us.
That's the topic of another class, podcast. And then, it's the same online. But online, warriors, you know, they have they like I said, they have this power to come and troll you, they dox you and all that. But you also have the power to flick them away with one click of a button, block and all that. So use it, lah.
Yeah.
You know, you're protected. You don't have to answer in life. Do anything you know and feel it's right, that's going to make the world better than you found it. Just do it. Never explain. Never apologize. And take whatever comes.
This is good advice from you, Mr. Sito.
Yeah, I live with this. I came out with this quote for myself many, many years ago. Never, never explain. Hello, you think everything you do, everybody will like. Hey, hello. Jesus Christ also got his detractors. Allah, Buddha also got his detractors. What you?
Yeah.
So before we go, one last question for you. What is your favorite food that your wife cooks?
My wife. Oh, she does. You know, sometimes I stay home.
You have to answer truthfully.
My stomach
she's here
also
had
to take a day off. She cook a very good Nonya style, although I don't find it outside. She say Nonya, I believe lah.
Yeah.
prawn, pork, and tau kwa porridge. A prawn porridge. With miso, with a bit of rempa, or that's where that one. And she put coriander, and you put fried shallots on it. Love it. She tembak lah. She says Nonya, I don't care lah. It's just.
But
nice.
You peranakan?
I think in my last life I am.
Think,
you know.
So in any case, it's a pleasure having you here, man.
Thank you, guys. Keep up your conversation. Keep discussing things that you don't get on the mainstream media.
Yep.
I mean, we don't really have a fourth estate media in Singapore that questions everything about people, about governance, about society, on behalf of us in our quest to make society a little bit better. We don't have that. So we rely on people like you.
Fantastic, man.
Thank you.
Amazing, amazing.
Thank you, guys.
Cheers, man.